Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is supported by listeners like you. Help support the show by logging on to lgbpodcast.blogspot.com and clicking donate. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 179 with Laurel Snyder and Julie Morstad, author and illustrator of Swan, The Life and Dance of Anna Pavlova, which is published by Chronicle. Swan is, without hesitation, a perfect picture book. So much so for me, in fact, that I found it difficult on several occasions during this conversation to articulate the full scope of its appeal in both art and text to me. This recording is full of the sounds of page turns as each Laurel, Julie, and myself flip to different favorite pages and play fan service to the beauty of this book. I love that Laurel and Julie had the first opportunity to meet during this chat, and I think it's a beautiful thing that they get to tell one another firsthand about the art and the manuscript. Enjoy the peek behind the curtains in that respect. Here is episode number 179 of the podcast with Laurel Snyder and Julie Morstad. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast. Laurel Snyder, Julie Morstad, I'm excited to be talking to both of you tonight.
Laurel, you go.
Okay. So when in doubt, I talk too much, so my tendency is to try to keep myself from talking.
Oh, you're so sweet. Let's go on an audio podcast and not say hi.
Well, thank you so much for having us here.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. Laurel, I'm so glad to be welcoming you back to the podcast and super excited to get to talk about a picture book tonight because my word, I think you and I have been, you have been more excited about Swan and have been anticipating it longer. But now that I have a copy in my possession, I have sort of not let it go. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. And Julie, that's absolutely in part because of you. But Laurel, thank you. I just want to start to say thank you for writing such a beautiful story.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a very special book for me, certainly. And I have been sort of anticipating it for a long time. So it's very exciting.
Yay. And you, Julie, my word, we are all, if you're on Twitter at all, if you're on social media whatsoever, the entire library world is just sort of embracing and loving you. I feel like you're sort of our kidlit darling right now. We all love your art and want to wear it on our shirts and on our bags and sorts. And just everywhere I look, I'm seeing pictures of everything posted.
Wow. That's so nice to hear. Thanks so much. I'm actually not on Twitter, so I'm pretty much, I just like live in a cave, not really knowing what's going on.
Well, I will download the internet for you and mail it in print form to you.
I'm not really in a cave. I'm on Instagram.
Well, it's Swan specifically is a beautiful book that the two of you came together for this, and one that it's gorgeous, both in how the art is in the words as much as it is in the illustrations you created, Julie. So it's amazing. I can't wait for people to hold it in their hands and love it. But Laurel, first, why don't I give you a chance to talk about it and just share what the story of Swan is all about?
Yes, I would love that. I've been sort of waiting to tell the story.
All right.
Which is it's kind of one of those, like, if it hadn't really happened, people would say it wasn't believable. But what happened is that I was an obsessive dancer girl when I was a little girl. And one of the things I love talking with kids about, and I'm looking forward to talking to kids about with this book, is that I failed, right? So I wanted to be a ballerina and I failed. And I think that's so important that, like, we get to fail at things I often tell the story of, like, how I succeeded in becoming an author from the age of 8 when I decided I wanted to be a writer. And that's very inspirational in one way. But, like, I wasn't built for ballet and I didn't have the commitment to it. And that wasn't going to happen. And I sort of set it aside. And all these years went past. And I still love to dance. But I had this particular obsession when I was a kid with Anna Pavlova. And that's centered around this book that I had found in a thrift store. That was a grown-up book. It was like a coffee table book kind of book that had old black and white, these beautiful glossy black and white photographs of her in it, and a section of her diaries. And most of the book I couldn't read, didn't understand. It was very academic. But the pictures I loved, and this section that had her, like, these diaries that she had written from when she was little, about her memories of when she was a little girl that she had written later on. And so I read them obsessively. And I guess at some point, I don't really remember this, but at some point I wrote in this book, which you're not supposed to do. And of course, let me just say, you should write in your library books. But I had written little notes in this book with my little pencil in my terrible handwriting. And it got shelved. And I actually took, when I went away to college, I took a lot of my children's books with me because I've always loved children's books. But this book got left behind in my mother's basement. And a couple of years ago, I was at my mom's house and she's starting to think about retiring and selling the house. And so she wanted me to go through the basement and sort of figure out if there was anything else I wanted in it. And I found this book and I hadn't thought about it in decades. And I opened it up. And when I opened it up, there were these notes from myself to me.
That's amazing.
it was crazy. I opened it up and it was sort of sad because the notes said things like, someday, I mean, this is embarrassing, I'm telling stories on myself, but like said things like, someday I shall dance as only Anna Pavlova has danced, you know, like these notes to myself about how someday I was going to be this amazing ballerina, this professional prima ballerina.
Did you recall writing that at all?
No.
Do you even remember writing in the book?
I mean, it's definitely my handwriting.
Yeah,
it's got my name all over it and curly Q's and letters and things, you know, flowers drawn around my L's. And but anyway, so I found this book and I brought it home and I went and I looked to see what's out there, like what Anna Pavlova books are out there. Because this story in these diaries was so beautiful. And I thought, well, surely somebody has done this already. And there wasn't much. I mean, there was nothing like this. There was nothing, not a real picture book like I wanted there to be. And that was sort of where it began, was this, just this sense that, like, I had started this idea when I was a kid. And now I, as a picture book author, as an adult, could go back and sort of help my childhood self finish it. And turn that, I mean, I didn't really use the text that I had written as a kid, but definitely the passion and the sort of sense of awe in her life, were in that moment of inspiration and sort of what came out was the text almost as you see it. I mean,
wow.
We made little changes and things like that, but it really was just like, she lived this amazing life that I had known about, loved as a kid and then forgotten. And then my childhood self had made these notes that woke my adult self up again and reminded me of it. So it's pretty amazing. And I feel like there's this whole power in the story of like what kids should be taking. I mean, like, I worry like all of our emails will be lost in the ether, but like the little scribbled notes that we make to ourselves, you know, they last. It's kind of amazing. So yeah, so that's the story of the book.
That is quite amazing.
I'm still, I'm just still trying to process that.
That's your amazing. Childhood Laurel, there's this podcast called, actually, Julie, you might have, it comes around you a lot knowing that I listen to it. It's called, Stuff Grownups Wrote as Kids people read, what is it? Adults read stuff they grown up. Yeah, there's a. I'm going to look it up while I'm talking to you. It's one of my favorite podcasts, but the name is so long I can't ever recall stuff. Adults read stuff they wrote as kids. It's something like that, and it's a tour that goes around doing this sort of show where you bring to the show your old diary, your old whatever, yeah. and read from it, and you know, there's always these sort of like great ahas, almost exactly like you're describing, only it's much more not like. And then this is what I turned into a beautiful children's book. It's much more like, and that's why I stay away from these kind of guys now, or something like that. adults read things they wrote as kids. Amazing podcast, and amazing that you're writing that. It gives me chills to think that happens, in that sort of magical way, your childhood self did preserve this deep, passionate, emotional memory that
I totally feel like I co-wrote it with myself. Yeah. Like, that's weird, right?
That's totally weird, but I was getting that, hearing that from you, that it's like I was looking at these words and clearly it was my handwriting. Wow, man. Wow. So you wrote it as you say, you wrote it almost exactly as it appears now in the text, right? In the book.
Some changes were made. The last line of the book used to be different. Pavlova's dying, her like last thing she said before she died, and this is in the author's note, was the words, "Play the last measure very softly." And that felt like a perfect death line to me, and I wanted that to be the last line of the book. But there were sort of too many endings already. So there were some places where we pulled it back and changed it. But it definitely came out sort of as a poem. And I had this very clear sense that if it was going to be a picture book, and this is, I think picture books and poetry have so much in common, that if it was going to be a picture book, there had to be room for the images to do work that you, the idea with poetry, right, is that you want to say as little as possible. You want to revise out everything you can. And so the sort of the idea of it being a picture book left me free to leave out a lot. So I feel like it came out really, really spare, and I knew that I needed to include her death, and that there were certain lines from the diaries that I wanted in there, words that she spoke to her mother, or that her mother spoke to her. And it really, yeah, it just kind of came out. I mean, it you never want to make it sound easy. It's not easy, and of course it went through revision, but this is one where it came out as it was, and I had this sense that like it was either going to get published or it was not going to get published. But I couldn't imagine how I was ever going to be able to revise it into being something else.
See, that
sort of, it was what it was.
It's because of this text then that I'm going to transition to Julie, because I love that the way you've written this and the way that it appears on the page is that it is broken up like a poem, with lines sort of offset, not all starting in a straight, you know, line or what have you. But the effect then is that it is like these steps on a dance floor, right? I mean, everything is just sort of, I mean, you're causing, a kid can look at a poem on a page and just read it outright, and that's that. But you're helping through this picture book format as well to sort of pace and dance around and orchestrate the way that the text is read. And the way, Julie, then that works with the way that you illustrated it and chose sort of the placement of the text and the way that things would be broken up by your illustrations is just, I mean, this is a dance. It's a beautiful work of art. And I feel like the way that there are sparse words and the way that there are phrases repeated is just, I don't know. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So Julie, when you received the manuscript then, or maybe Laurel as well, when you sent the manuscript, it was then broken up this way for you to sort of determine how your illustrations would go into it?
So when I got the manuscript, it was, you know, in just on paper, right? No breakup, what's that word again? Pagination, though I can never remember.
No, okay, that's, yeah.
So basically what I did was I went through it, and can I just say that when I got the manuscript, I basically lost my mind. Can I just put that in there? Because I actually, it's interesting, but I had a similar experience as a young girl interested in ballet and kind of started a bit too late and wasn't the best dancer in the class, you know, but had the passion for it, but didn't end up going further with it. So there's something about ballet that kind of, it's so beautiful to me, but there's also like this sort of sadness and kind of bittersweetness about the whole experience for me. Yeah. Wasn't all positive. Like some of it was, you know, kind of makes me feel sad a bit, but it's all like, it's all wrapped up and in kind of a beautiful thing. And so to read this manuscript and I actually, as a child, spent a lot of time in the library kind of looking through books about, you know, Pavlova and Marie Antoinette and Marilyn Monroe, like random. And so I knew a lot about her already, like when I was a kid. And so to be given this as a manuscript was sort of just like basically a dream come true. It was like, I can't even believe that I'm getting the opportunity to do this. So I just wanted to put that in there. So when I got the manuscript, basically I went through it, kind of just sat down comfortably and just sort of intuitively decided what, you know, because I see things right away, like in terms of certain lines. And so there were certain things that I really could see. And this is just part of, like, I guess my illustration process, but there's always pages or spreads that you see really distinctly right away.
Really?
Yeah. So like, for example, the page where the spread where she's going to try out for the ballet school and she ends up being too young and they turn her away. That spread, that one, you know, that was like, wham, like I need, it has to be done like that. And another thing, when I first read the manuscript, I had a really strong vision of like the snow at night in St. Petersburg with like the candle or like the street lights and how pink it must have looked, because when it's snowing anyways, you know, the sky is so pink, and then with the street lights. And so imagining being in a, you know, in a horse-drawn carriage going to see the ballet for the first time and it being like snowing heavily and everything being really pink. So I really wanted to have pink skies. that was important to me. I got it in on that spread. So, and the first one. So I don't know if I really answered your question, but the way that this text got broken up is very much a process of a combination of, you know, what I see. And then also, what, Melissa and Christine, the editor and the designer, felt would work as well. So it's such a collaborative process. So we should give a
shout out to Chronicle too, because this book, like, it got longer incrementally, and I think we both had things to do with, like, I think we both periodically, like, I'd be like, but that page needs to not have any words on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it just kept getting longer and longer.
Yeah. It was definitely probably the hardest book I've ever done, I have to say, like, just in terms of getting it right, like getting the colors right, getting the tone right, the mood in certain scenes. We had to do a lot of revision. So I think it was worth it. I feel good about it, but it was definitely like, yeah, it makes sense, like in terms of like metaphorically for, you know, her grueling sort of life becoming a dancer. I kind of felt like this book was grueling too.
Yeah, I want to say that I'm really grateful for all the work you did. This was a book where sort of there was a lot of back and forth and delay, and I could sort of, I typically we get kept apart, authors and illustrators, and I could sort of feel like across the miles, I wanted to like send you chocolates or something. Like, I didn't know how to like I'm sorry, I roped you into this somehow.
No, it's good. It was all worth it. It was very, it was a huge learning process too for me and super enjoyable. So,
well, let me,
I have no complaints.
Let me, if you don't mind, then both of you, just take a moment to be a fan and share sort of my reaction to this book as well. And to nod to Chronicle as well, because, this almost without question is the most beautiful picture book I've seen. of anything recent coming out. And I think it's because of the opportunity to take your time in this story and let it develop. Mm-hmm. And also, Laurel, because of just how little words are there, you have absolutely communicated how every word counts. Much like, I mean, I'm going to draw these conclusions and these connections because that's as a reader what I picked up, but I feel like much like in the dance, like in ballet, that there's a planned pacing and step, and everything is to music, to a choreography, but nothing is rushed and nothing is sort of out of place. And I feel like the format of this book and the execution of it was pulled off that way too. And
we
Julie,
spent 3 days at the end fighting about whether the line should be, if only every life could end in such sweet applause, and if only each life could end in such sweet applause, like, or, oh, dance, if only each dance could end in such sweet applause, if only every dance could end in such sweet, like, the number of emails that went back and forth about that word choice, and like, what it would mean if it was one, and what it would mean if it was the other, but also the beats that it takes up, and I mean, it really was a creative process that's unlike anything I've ever done in my life, and it was, in some ways, I think, grueling for everyone involved, but also just this sense that we were, like, making this very careful thing.
Yeah, well, you know,
to get it wrong.
The result, too, feels like, I don't, sometimes people read books to their children at night, or to the classes during school or what have you. And they walk away feeling like, I could write a book like this. This is easy. Writing a picture book is easy. I could do this, right? Because sometimes the execution is so, maybe so flawless that it just feels effortless. This book, and I think you're echoing it in your sentiments, does not feel effortless. It feels very labored and deliberate. And it feels, to use that word I can't get away from, or the phrase, it feels like a work of art. It feels like there was practice, and there were choices that had to be made. There was some sort of a sacrifice through this, that there was sweat over this book, and there was sort of blood and tears over this book to pull it off. And I think that, Julie, I need to just nod to the palette that you use in this book, because it's, I feel like if, I'm sure it's so much greater than what my brain walks away from, but to have these flashes of color in my mind of grays and of whites and of pinks and of turquoise, and that's sort of what is flashing through my head as I'm going through the different scenes of this book, and to have it be able to be communicated so much through color and things like that as well. It's just something, there was sort of an experience to the way this book was pulled off. And I also want to point out, because I'm positive this is coming through my microphone from me, so listeners, I apologize, but I keep flipping through this book over and over while I'm talking to you both, because there's just so much. It's still, every time I open it, there's just so much to look at. There's so much that, I mean, if I, the end of it, I was at the end of it alone, that you were just referencing, Laurel, with those lines that you were trying to get right. If I could sort of, well, it's not spoiling the book, because it's Anna's life. We know that she died. We know that, and you shared earlier that is how the book concludes. But would you mind if I sort of the end to both of you? Is that okay?
Sure.
So we see Anna. This is the final three spreads. We see Anna lying on her bed, on her deathbed, and flowers and an image of a swan are sort of swirling around her, and the text goes, Anna tries to waltz away, to spin and sway. She'll turn and turn and turn from this, she thinks. If she can just keep dancing. She calls for her feathers, but, and the page turns to lights down and the curtain closing. Every day must end in night. Every bird must fold its wings. Every feather falls at last and settles. Oh, thinks Anna, if only every dance could end in such sweet applause. I mean, that's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Thank you. And can Julie, I want to add for Julie,
please.
We haven't had a chance to have this conversation, but like I had the flip side of your experience when I got the first sketches. I had never been privy to that part of the process in quite the same way before. So we had sort of notes passed back and forth, but it's the first time I've ever gotten handwritten notes from anybody. And it felt different somehow. Like, I felt like I was having a conversation with you because it was your handwriting and not a typed document.
Oh yeah. I forgot that I did that. I wrote all those notes. Yeah. Cause it felt better.
But it goes back to the thing of like, I found my own scribbles. Do you know what I mean? Like I found my own scribbles and that started the book. And then I got your scribbles and I just felt like this whole, I don't know, conversation around it. But then when I opened the sketches, I mean, my kids were with me, and I took a picture of it at the time because it was so funny. I burst into tears. But it is so rare. It is not uncommon that I get back the first art on a book and I'm shocked and blown away and I'm amazed and I'm like, this is so much better than I could have imagined. Like sort of have this experience of like, you say something on the page and then somebody else is supposed to somehow turn that into a picture that you hope resembles something inside your own head. And most of the time it doesn't. Most of the time it looks different than it did in your head, but it's different. Mm-hmm. And that's collaboration. And that's, I believe in collaboration. And mm-hmm. I've never really, unless there was like a factual error, never really have I said like, it should be this. I mean, a book I had come out 2 years ago, the main character I thought was a boy and it turned out to be a girl, but okay, if that's what the illustrator thought, that's what the illustrator thought. You know, first person. Yeah. So I didn't say, how could they know? This was the first time I've ever gotten a book and just kind of like gasped because I literally felt like you saw the picture in my brain.
Oh my God.
And I think it is because, I mean, it sounds like your ballet experience was exactly like my ballet experience. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the right body. Mm-hmm. I ended up with some eating issues around that in high school. I was never that good a dancer. I knew I could never be professional. You know, that sort of, there was all this longing and sadness and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the black and white and pink that is the ballet garb to me. Mm-hmm. Like, there was just so much of that in it, the kind of line you were using. I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to say to you, like, I also felt, I don't know. I felt like I was like, oh, somebody just got it. I don't know how they did that. They just got it. Like, okay.
That's so cool. Well, that's nice to hear. Thanks.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is, in such a great way, this is a book that can be studied for the way that it's executed. And that's a great thing. Julie, I know that you work in, you don't work digitally. You work, however I always say it, I always like, you work with real stuff, right?
Well, you know what? I do use Photoshop to put layers together sometimes, okay, depending on what I want to achieve. So, but yes, I mainly work with, you know, I never know how to word that either, like with my students and stuff, because it seems like you don't want to make a hierarchy between the two things.
No, not at all.
But
you're working in a physical medium is sometimes the way that I put it, in a way that too, that we could come and see and touch your art and feel it, and it has a physical presence, whereas digital art can sort of only be, it's hard to sort of know what the final print is because it's ultimately just printed out.
Yeah. Yeah, this book actually has more digital layering within it. But what I mean by that is, like, I will draw, I'll draw the layers by hand or paint them, and then I put them together in Photoshop. And that part of that reason is because we did so many revisions. So, some, you know, at one point it was like, well, these drawings aren't quite, or they're not standing out enough, or these colors need to be more vibrant here, or things like that. So I ended up, but because I didn't necessarily want to redraw the drawings, because sometimes when you're drawing, you feel like you just got it right. That first time you did it, you got it right. And you that's how I feel. Like, I just, absolutely, I won't be able to, especially with like gestural drawing, like dancing, you know, there's so many things to get right. And I don't think that I've necessarily got them all right. But you know, sometimes you just feel
like it's the turn of the neck or the flick of the wrist or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of medium, there is a lot of layering of traditional media digitally. So yeah. Like, for example, the snow was done using charcoal or like a, I can't even remember what kind of pencil I use now, some kind of Conte or something, but black, but then you take it into Photoshop and make it white. The reason that you do that is because white doesn't stand out well. Like if I were to have just used a white pencil on top of the artwork, the physical artwork, it wouldn't stand out in the same way. And I really wanted the snow to be like, you know, I wanted it to feel like you could feel the snow on your face or something, you know, like, so.
No, right, like snow on a window pane or something.
Yeah.
Like it's opaque. Yeah.
Exactly.
I like the way, because you're using such a mixture of different mediums here, I like the, how often I saw what looked like pencil coloring, right? Were you using a texture like that in crayon? I could see that every once in a while you would see this glimpse of, it just felt like, it just added a feeling to it. It added a texture to it.
Yeah, it was important to me that the line be done in pencil, or like it's actually a black, like a sort of like a pencil crayon that's black, because I wanted to keep to keep the line gestural, to be in keeping with the book, with dance, and for me that, and for many people, a pencil is the most gestural kind of tool. We're just kind of trained that way, I think, as artists.
Okay.
Once you start working with, I mean, everyone's different, but when I'm working with like a nib pen, the line is not as gestural. So it was important to me. I think I had to give up a bit of sort of the line side. It's a bit fuzzy or faded out a bit sometimes, but to me it was more important that the feel be right of the line. So yeah, that was important. I'm glad that you noticed my pencil lines.
Well, and I like that. Go ahead, Laura. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I did too, but for me, it's a different reason, which is that when I was a kid and I drew, I always drew with pencil because you, like, if you're drawing a face and a neck, you can erase the line where the, you know, like,
yeah.
So you want to color in the hair, and I'm a terrible artist. I can't draw, and I don't know what any of these words mean, but like you want to draw yellow hair over a head, so you draw an oval and then you erase the top of the oval so that you can draw the hair. So when a kid draws, they always have those pencil lines any place that they're using light color, but it's because they're filling in with crayon, right?
Right.
So that combination of like washed out color and pencil to me reads as 10 years old, like always, always, always.
Nice.
And so for me, it was important. I don't know. It felt right.
Yeah.
I liked in the opening spread when it was dark and Anna is sitting there amongst all the adults and most of their outfits are just black, but you can see like the pencil, you just see that sort of shimmer of their clothes on there. That's one of the things that it caught my eye. And also that the cover is shiny.
Yeah, that's pretty.
The spot gloss.
I love Bess. I think, well, my very, very, very favorite page is actually the one where she's got her suitcase and she's by the train.
Yeah. Boy, the expression on the face.
Yeah,
I mean, Julie, you were mentioning like wanting to get the position of each of the poses that you have and the expression on the face, but that one is carried off so well.
Oh, thank you. That was another. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, no, no. You.
That was another one of the images that I felt really, like I really saw it quite strongly when I first read the manuscript, and it never got revised through the refs process. I believe that was as is, which is kind of interesting because usually when I have like a really strong feeling about that, it usually the editors and other people respond in the same way. So that's kind of cool.
That is.
So thank.
Yeah. Well, and I like hearing too that you're that you have chosen the right medium, the right art, whatever tools to use for this story. I can't ever get the words right, but to use for this versus again the other work that I've seen that's so beautiful that you've done, like in the medium that you use in Julia Child, or the what you use for This Is Sadie. Both of those are just, they look different. They lend themselves to the story well, and this is the same. I love that I can tell from your art that it's the same person executing it. It's the same style. You sort of have the same way of positioning people so thoughtfully, and of orchestrating the things you do on the page, and of letting the scenery be a character itself. But the way you use color to help share the story and communicate, it's just great.
Thank you.
Although, when I was a kid, my favorite page would have been the one where she wears all the different costumes.
Yeah.
Oh. I think girls do where they get together and like, which one would you wear if you had to wear?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I remember really distinctly being a kid and looking through Vogue magazines, yeah, or, totally, you know, fashion magazines. And that was back when they would advertise cigarettes, mm-hmm, and there was this Virginia Slims, I just remember it so clearly, and it was like a timeline of fashion, an illustrated timeline of fashion, and then at the end, like, and of course they're all smoking.
Come a long way, baby.
And there, yeah, that's it. And there's and for some reason this, like,
yep,
doing this page kind of like scratched that itch of wanting to, like, just loving that page as a kid.
Yeah, totally.
Minus the cigarette part. Cigarettes are bad.
Yeah. Cigarettes are bad, kids.
Yeah,
cigarettes
are really bad.
I love this because of again as the way that I was drawn to drawing as a kid and adding all the details everywhere. I love when she's going across the globe and says about meeting kings and queens, and you've got this like great rug that they're all standing on, and this awesome pattern on the rug, and then everyone's sort of positioned and clapping hands or holding arms and poised that way. I was a person that liked to draw individuals in a crowd over and over and over, and those sort of minute details on the clothing and on the on the furniture and all of that. So that was something that, I don't know, anything that can draw my face closer to the art in a book, that's a good thing in my mm-hmm, judging.
Cool. Definitely, yeah. Deserves Waldo factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, ladies, you created something awesome, and I can't wait for the next 9 books you have together. You did sign a contract with... No.
The problem is I would want them all to be melancholy. Like, vaguely deathy.
I'm okay with that.
The problem is selling people melancholy death.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the market we need.
No, totally.
Reams of manuscripts nobody
knows. well the truth is that Swan is going to be a testament to how well having the right author and the right illustrator coming together with the right story can come out with a result like this. So I really am thankful for our readers and for me and for everyone else that's going to read it that you two came together and labored so much and so thoughtfully over this book to make it what it is.
Well, thank you
so
for having
much.
Us. Yeah. And I want to say thank you too, because this is really our first time meeting. So
yeah,
really
amazing.
Cool when there's a reason to bring us together sort of across that divide.
Yeah.
It is special.
Well, it's an honor for me. I'm glad that we got to work it out that way. It's very nice. And before we go, let's learn perhaps a little bit more about each other. Laurel, I asked this question at the end of every podcast, but I asked you this at some point. I haven't remembered since then because it's been, I think, over a year. But I'm going to ask you about kickball, which is a childhood thing for me. I wasn't growing up in ballet. I was growing up on the field playing kickball with my friends. But certainly, I think this is a question that gets at sort of those people that you keep near and dear to you in the work that you're doing. So I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person, each of you, alive or past from the kid-lit world, you would want on your team and why. Laurel, why don't we start with you?
Well, so I went and listened to the answer I did last time because I was afraid of repeating myself. And you know what I did? That was right before Journey came out. And I said Aaron. That the person I would want was Aaron Becker because we actually were in elementary school together and did play kickball as children, or not very good at it, as I remember. So now I get to pick somebody. So I'm going to go with my go-to girl, my always girl, who is Margaret Wise Brown.
Yes.
And I would say two things. I would say, first of all, she was very athletic. She was very sporty. So she would compensate for the fact that I am myself terrible at anything that involves the ball. And secondarily, she was a lush. And I think that she would be fun to go out for champagne after the ball.
Perfect.
There you go.
Well thought out. Well done. Cigarettes are bad, but hanging out with lush is totally awesome.
Champagne from the well, naked in the woods. Totally okay.
Oh, that's amazing. All right. Julie, you're up.
Do I only get one?
Take a couple.
Okay. So Ruth Krauss. Because I don't really know that much about Ruth Krauss, but I connect so much with her writing and the way that she writes, or maybe studied children and sort of learned how to think like a child. I don't really know what her process was exactly, but her writing in A Hole is to Dig and Open House for Butterflies and all of those books, they're like the perfect books. Of course, you know, the fact that Maurice Sendak illustrated those books is pretty amazing, but I'm not going to pick Maurice Sendak because I want to pick someone else. So can I pick an artist too?
Please.
Okay. So I would pick Gio Fujikawa because I think that she's kind of under celebrated in a way. I mean, I don't know, maybe in the States she's really celebrated, but I feel like what she did was so important in that she showed kids of different ethnicities together, but in a way that wasn't, and as Ezra Jack Heats did too, but in a way that wasn't trying to do it and trying to be, you know, like, look at me, look what I'm doing. She was just kind of showing life, and her work is just so playful and charming. So, and she was really a magnificent draftsperson, really good drawer. So
yeah,
I would choose her. I don't know about kickball. I don't know anything about kickball. What is kickball? Is it like soccer? Or?
No, it's like baseball with a red rubber ball.
Oh, there you go.
It, instead of hitting it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm the
and
most.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, I'm the most unathletic. I would be running away from that game. Like, I'd be on the other side of town running away from that ball. So
that's sort of why I always loved it. I think when I was a kid, that was sort of the one sport I could play that everyone forgot if I was bad or not, because I was like a tall, lanky kid. And so it sort of was just okay. When I played, everyone sort of just moved on.
Nice.
I was actually terrified of catching the ball because it was a giant red rubber ball. And I think probably I took it in the face once or twice.
Yeah.
But hey.
That's what childhood's all about.
I was going to say, that is what childhood is all about. I was just going to say it, Laurel. Hey, thanks for coming on tonight, Julie and Laurel. This is super fun, and I love Swan. I'm super excited for it to get in front of readers, for it to get in front of other librarians. And thank you so much for being able to come on together and share with me and share, I suppose, with one another.
Thanks so
for having
much.
Us.
What a pleasure.
Yeah.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by Matthew Winner in his library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. Theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.